Hi, this is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I want to welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. We're going to be beginning with John 12, verse 31 this week, where Jesus says, "Now judgment is upon this world. Now the ruler of this world will be cast out." I've gotten so much positive feedback from last week's eSight by the encouraging emails that have come in, but I've also got a lot of questions, and they're really good questions, and they're very thoughtful questions. What I've noticed is most of the questions have one thing in common. They're rooted and grounded in Anselm's paradigm of defining the atonement, by contrast to the paradigm that I was writing from, hence the questions. Let me quickly and simply explain what all this really means. Within Christianity today, there are actually three acceptable paradigms in which to interpret the purpose of Jesus' death and resurrection on our behalf. The oldest paradigm, going all the way back to Jesus and the apostles and even the first century Christianity, is the paradigm of Christus Victor. That's Latin for Christ is Victor. And I'll explain what all this is at the end of this podcast. But the second paradigm appeared in its fully developed form in 1097. It was in a book by Anselm of Canterbury, a Benedictine monk who later became Archbishop of Canterbury. And it's interesting that although he was a latecomer to the party, so to speak, almost 1,000 years, once again, after Christ and the apostles, his views regarding the purpose of Christ's atoning work would become the central belief in medieval Christianity and much of the theology of the Protestant Reformation. His teaching regarding the purpose of Christ's death is the paradigm that many Christians are raised in. Many mistakenly believe that Anselm's way of interpreting the cross is really their only option, and in all fairness, Anselm's views aren't all bad. Many have come to a deep, abiding love and appreciation for Christ and his cross through Anselm's paradigm. But in an effort to be very honest as well, many have been driven to atheism by Anselm's views too. Anselm's view came to be known as penal substitutionary atonement. And once again, I'll explain what this is in a moment. It's important to realize that Anselm's theories are not the only acceptable Christian option when it comes to interpreting the purpose of Christ's death and resurrection. Now, finally, there was a third view, and it came out in the 17th century from a reformer named Hugo Grotius. He developed a view that interpreted Christ's suffering as being for the purpose of God revealing to us the consequences of sin and with the hope of inspiring holiness of living. The cross, according to Grotius, preserved God's moral government, and that's why this paradigm is called the moral government theory. So you've got the Christus Victor, you've got penal substitutionary atonement, and you've got the moral government theory. And other views have existed in Christianity too, such as Abelard's moral influence theory. But the three that we're mentioning in this podcast, the Christus Victor, penal substitutionary atonement, and the moral government theory, are the acceptable ways within Christianity today of interpreting Jesus' death, the purpose of Jesus' death and resurrection within Western Christianity. Again, most of the questions that came in to me last week were a result of trying to understand some of my statements from within Anselm's penal substitutionary model rather than from within the model that I was writing from, which is the Christus Victor model. And I want to be clear, I do not believe that those who subscribe to Anselm's penal substitution model are any less in love with Jesus or any less committed to him. I deeply believe that our fellowship with one another should be based first and foremost on our common love for Jesus and our commitment to love and serve him and others. Doctrinal agreement is secondary. It's important, but it's secondary, and it's something that we're all in the process of reaching. On a very personal level, I have what I consider to be some fundamental and philosophical questions concerning some of the presuppositions that Anselm's view is based on. And I vowed years ago I would never teach or preach something if I didn't, at the very minimum, have, once again, at the minimum, my own questions answered concerning it. And I feel most at home understanding the statements made by the New Testament authors, including Paul, when I read them from within the Christus Victor paradigm. But I know at the same time that many of you have sincerely shared through your questions and your emails that you're not familiar with this model. You've been raised, much like I was, with Anselm's theory. as the only explanation that's available. So I'd like to spend this and the next two, maybe even three podcasts sharing with you what the Christus Victor paradigm is and some of the truly revolutionary and heartwarming reasons that I feel it most eloquently brings forth the beauty of God's character of love. I'll be keeping this simple. Usually discussions associated with atonement theory comparisons are very complex. I want to keep it simple here. I also want to say that although I'm going to be giving careful attention to appealing to reason and intellectual honesty, these next few podcasts will be addressing this topic from the point of view of why it matters, kind of a heart-level discussion, rather than strictly the dry, cerebral, intellectual one that honestly puts many of us to sleep in the first few minutes. So buckle up your seatbelts. Here's a brief introduction, and we'll continue it next week. First, Jesus saw himself going to the cross primarily to confront the devil. He saw his mission to destroy Satan and his works. You can see this in John 12:31, where Jesus says, "Now is the judgment of this world. Now is the ruler of this world cast out." John 14:30, Jesus said, "I will not say much more to you, for the prince of the world is coming. He has no hold over me." In Luke 11:21 and 22, we find Jesus saying, "When a strong man, fully armed, guards his own house, his possessions are safe. But when someone stronger attacks and overpowers him, he takes away the armor in which the man trusted and divides up his plunder." Now, I want to be very honest from the beginning. I know the problems that this view produces for many of our postmodern naturalistic thinkers in today's society. As a follower of Jesus, I continue to revisit the historical evidence that I have come to base the intellectual foundation of my own faith in Jesus on. And I will be the first to agree that a belief in the devil or Satan has been grossly abused. Many accuse Christians of inventing the devil to absolve themselves from guilt, sayings like, "The devil made me do it." But as a follower of Jesus, I cannot deny that Jesus himself taught that there actually is an enemy. There is an accuser. And it was defeating this enemy that his entire ministry was centered on. His death and resurrection would climax in the defeat of this enemy. This is the Christus Victor paradigm. The penal substitutionary model focuses exclusively on the theory that Jesus' death was a payment of God's penalty for sin. Sin that, and here's one of my philosophical rubs, this is sin that I can't help but participate in. No one can go from birth to the grave without sinning at least once. A situation which I didn't ask to be born into, and a situation that I can't save myself from, but a situation nonetheless that somehow I'm supposed to be punished for. If you've got questions about that, if that doesn't make sense to you, welcome to the club. These are my questions. This is probably the most significant question that I personally have with what Anselm taught. The Christus Victor paradigm, on the other hand, takes very seriously the claims and accusations of the accuser and presents the death and resurrection of Jesus as God's means of overthrowing both those claims and those accusations. You can find this in Revelation 12, verse 10, and I encourage you to look it up and read it, chapter 12, verse 10 and 11. By contrast, in Anselm's view, the purpose of Jesus' death was to appease God. In the Christus Victor paradigm, the purpose of Jesus' death and resurrection was to overthrow and destroy the work of the devil. This is how the apostles put it. 1 John 5:19, "We know that we are children of God, and that the whole world is under the control of the evil one." Ephesians 6:12, "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against rulers and against authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." 1 John 3:8, "The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the work of the devil." Colossians 2:15, "Having disarmed the powers and authorities, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them by the cross." Hebrews 2:14, "Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, and that is the devil." This understanding of the purpose of Jesus' death and resurrection goes all the way back to the beginning in the Genesis narrative. In Genesis 3:14-15, it says, "The Lord God said to the serpent, 'He will crush your head, and you will strike his heel.'" This again is the purpose in Jesus's and the disciples' view of Jesus' ministry, of Jesus' death, and of Jesus' resurrection. In Luke 13, 10 through 15, follow closely the story. On a Sabbath, Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues, and a woman was there who had been crippled by a spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not straighten up at all. When Jesus saw her, he called her forward and said to her, "Woman, you are set free from your infirmity." Then he put his hand on her, and immediately she straightened up and praised God, indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath. The synagogue leader said to the people, "There are 6 days for work, so come and be healed on those, not on the Sabbath." The Lord answered him, "You hypocrites! Doesn't each of you on the Sabbath untie your ox and donkey from the stall and lead it out to give it water? Then should not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has kept bound for 18 long years, be set free on the Sabbath day from what has bound her?" Notice she was being set free from Satan, which had bound her. In Acts 10:38, the apostles write of how God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Spirit and power, and how he went around doing good, healing all who were under the power of the devil because God was with him. This, again, in Jesus' view, was the purpose of his death and resurrection. In Luke 13:32, we find this. He said to them, "Go and tell that fox, 'Behold, I cast out demons, I perform cures today and tomorrow, and the third day I complete my mission.'" This is the Christus Victor paradigm. Now, I want to also clarify this, that throughout the centuries, those who have held this view have always been united in the notion that the purpose of Jesus' birth, life, death, and resurrection was to defeat the enemy. This is what the purpose of Jesus' death was for. Now, how Jesus was victorious over the enemy, this, on the other hand, has not always met with such a unified understanding. In my personal understanding, there are two ways in which Jesus destroyed the work of the devil. On one hand, Jesus' life and death centered on revealing the character of the Father. This was in opposition to the lies that had been propagated concerning God by the enemy, by the accuser. On the other hand, Jesus' life, death, and resurrection also revealed something very significant about you and I that would defeat the accusations of the enemy and his claim for dominion over us as well. You see, with both of these hands, the accuser was disarmed and made a public spectacle of in Colossians 2:15. Both of these facets of defeating the accuser contain radically transforming insight into God's radical self-sacrificial other-centered love for us. Both of these aspects, for me, leave my heart in awe, saying, "Behold what manner of love the Father has for me." Both of these facets awaken in me a deeply profound longing to no longer live for myself, but for him who died and rose again. And you can find these principles in 1 John 3:1 and 2 Corinthians 5, verse 14. Now, I've given to you two facets of how I think Christ's death and resurrection defeated the accuser. We're going to be looking at the first of these two facets in the next podcast next week. In the meantime, though, remember this week that you are loved far more than you will ever fathom. And in light of God's radical, indiscriminate, selfless, humble, other-centered love for you, go out and love like this. Keep building the kingdom. I love you guys. I'll see you next week.